Martin Funeral Home, Center Avenue in Butler on Wednesday from 6 to 8 p.m. Following will be a blessing service at the funeral home at 8 p.m. Burial for Frank Russo Jr. will take place in the St. Michael's Cemetery. Christopher J. Diaz, age 30, of Butler, passed away on Thursday in Johnstown, PA, as a result of a work-related accident. He was employed at Insight Pipe Contracting. He was also a motivational speaker for individuals in recovery. He is survived by his son, also his mother, and his father, his stepsister, and his step-grandmother, also a number of aunts, uncles, and cousins. Friends will be received at the Geibel Funeral Home, East Cunningham Street in Butler, from 2 to 4 and 6 to 8 on Tuesday. A massive Christian burial celebrated 10 a.m. Wednesday from Holy Sepulchre Roman Catholic Church. Interment will follow at the Calvary Cemetery in Butler. And that's it for your final notes for today. Complete obituary information is available to you on our website at butlerradio.com.
When you sit down and really consider your priorities, your family and health are tied for first place and are directly related to each other. Have you thought about how everyone in your family and even your extended family would be affected if someone died? At the Martin Funeral Home, they are prepared to help the entire family through these life changes. No doubt, the death of a loved one is devastating, and the grieving process varies from person to person. All death-related business matters are handled personally by a member of the Martin family, either Ross or his son Tom Martin. For personal preference at a funeral home, let the Martin Funeral Home handle everything. The Martin Funeral Home, located on Center Avenue in Butler.
WISR News Time is just about 12:32. So your weather forecast, we're just talking about this in the studio. It's rain, snow, cold, and the end. That was it. That's basically your weather forecast. High today about 43. I know we're sick of it. A low tonight down to 30, and then tomorrow a high near 40. News time is 12:32. Dave Malarkey's up next. Thanks for joining us. Have a good day.
And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey. 724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn. Weekdays from 12:30 to 2 on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn. 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey.
Once again, everyone, welcome. Nice to have you with us on the Monday edition, the rainy, cold Monday. Boy, I tell you what, you get a taste of springtime weather. Low 80s on Friday, right around 80 degrees on Saturday, and then you get back to this stuff. It's really frustrating, isn't it? We have a lot of guests to talk with today, and we're going to start right off with, today is Wolf-Hirschhorn Syndrome Awareness Day. This is a genetic condition. It's pretty rare, but we have a local family who has a beautiful young child who suffers from this condition. So we're going to talk to them, and actually in just a few minutes, Megan and Mark Johnson will be joining us. But we thought it would be a good idea, first of all, I did, because I was not familiar with this condition whatsoever. And I'm not a doctor, and neither are Megan or Mark Johnson. So we were able to find a pediatrician here in the Butler area, Dr. Christiana Morganti, to give us some medical background on this condition. Now, because she's a doctor and she wasn't sure she was going to be able to join us live here at this hour, I talked to her about an hour ago and recorded the conversation. So we're going to start off with that, and we'll learn a little bit more about this condition. And then we'll talk with Megan and Mark Johnson. That'll be the first segment of the program today. Later, we're going to be talking about the Butler Little Theater and also about Cloud Chamber and the Butler County Symphony's summer program of concerts. So all of that to come later. First of all, though, I think are we ready with that? We have that ready to go. This is the conversation I had about an hour ago with Dr. Morganti. Going to be talking, listeners, about what I think is a is a pretty rare condition today. It's certainly something that I've never heard of before. It's called Wolff-Horschön syndrome. And today has been declared as a day to bring more public awareness to this condition. And we're going to be talking with a medical doctor from here in our area, Christiana Morganti. Dr. Morganti, thanks for joining us today to explain this condition for us a little bit here.
Sure.
I would not be alone, I suppose, in saying that I'd never heard of this before. It's pretty rare, isn't it?
It is very rare, about 1 in 50,000 births. So in comparison, Down syndrome is about 1 in 700 births. So it is very rare.
And was it discovered or named fairly recently, or does it go back a ways?
It goes back a ways. They actually thought it was part of something called cru de chez, which is a deletion of the short arm of the fifth chromosome. They thought it was just a kind of a variation, and they more recently found that it was actually a completely different chromosome, the fourth chromosome, and it's the short arm of the fourth chromosome that's missing in this particular syndrome. And because it was distinct enough and they could finally do genetic testing, they did distinguish it as its own syndrome then.
Are there any outward signs of this condition in a newborn, or is it usually diagnosed later in infancy or the toddler stage?
It can be diagnosed right away. They do have distinctive facial features that make it stand out, but sometimes newborns can look similar no matter what they have. So it can be picked up in the early, if you're looking for the certain abnormalities. Some of them stand out more. Some of them are very subtle, like they have smaller jaws. They have very short between their nose and their lips. They have kind of a, what they call a beaked nose, which means it's kind of flattened. But they can have ear deformities that, like tags and pits that you can see. So some of those might alert you right away that there's something up in the newborn period.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking, listeners, with Dr. Christiana Morganti. She is with the Butler Health System Pediatric Hospitalists. I don't know why I'm stumbling over that word. It's a little difficult to say. And you are here in Butler, right, Dr. Morganti?
Yes, I am.
Mm-hmm. Would I be correct in calling you a pediatrician, or is that just something you focus on once in a while?
No, I am a pediatrician. I do outpatient and inpatient at the hospital.
Are there different degrees of severity of Wolff-Horschön syndrome?
There are, depending on how much of the chromosome is deleted. They have seen up to 3 genes deleted, and so depending on whether you have 1, 2, or 3 of those affected, for instance, if you're just the very tip of the chromosome, might just give you the facial facial features that we talked about. Whereas if the second gene is deleted, you tend to have a child with seizures, and then if the third one's deleted, you have even more abnormalities, like they can have cleft lip and palate and heart defects and some other things that go along. So it does have a wide variation.
Does this tend to, generally speaking, shorten the lifespan of a child who has this condition, or no?
It does. Most of them live till they're, but it varies again as to how much of a deletion you have, but I think the oldest has only lived into their 40s.
Hmm. And by the way, we're talking about this because we're going to be chatting a little bit later on this segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR with a couple of parents who have a beautiful young daughter who suffers from this condition. But in addition, this has been declared Wolff-Horschön Syndrome Day by Governor Tom Wolf, who wants to call more attention to this this condition. So today is the day. And we appreciate Dr. Morganti being able to talk to us today about it. Is this ever detected in utero, Dr. Morganti, before the baby is born?
They can do very specific gene testing in utero that can pick it up. They would have to do what's called FISH testing, which is short for fluorescent in situ hybridization. But most of the time it is not, because it's not something that's hereditary. So most of the time it's a completely random event that parents aren't expecting or looking for. So a lot of times the generic testing they do in utero is more to look if you have an extra chromosome or are missing a chromosome, but not a specific section of the chromosome, so like this one, this syndrome is.
Boy, I'll tell you, the research that's been done in genetics in the past generation is just phenomenal. I can remember in my undergraduate health class, you know, when we studied genetics, you learned about fruit flies, and that was about it.
<That's right>.
We know so much more these days. You answered one of my other questions. Is there a genetic component to this? So it doesn't necessarily run in families or anything like that?
Correct. And most of the time, about 87% is the latest figure. It's completely random, no expectation for it, and then the subsequent children of those parents won't have this syndrome at all.
I know in some conditions, autism would be one, more boys than girls tend to have it. Is there any gender factor here? Does it occur more in young girls or young boys, or no?
It's actually 2-to-1 girls over boys for this particular syndrome, and they don't really know why, but it does favor girls.
Well, that's something for the genetic researchers to work on. Is it always present at birth? It must be. It doesn't develop later on, right?
Correct. Yeah, it's something that happens very early in when the egg is just dividing. So, yes, it would be present at birth.
So that would seem to rule out, listen to me, talking like I'm a geneticist here, that would seem to rule out hormonal differences between boys and girls, because that would really not be that much of a factor, you know, before the child was born. I wouldn't think so.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any other problems that these precious little ones will face if they suffer from this wolf Hirschhorn syndrome?
I think the biggest is right away they would have issues with, say, sucking because their tone is low, their muscle tone. They can have seizures, which obviously you need to support that and put them on medication. You would certainly have them follow with a geneticist, because even if we do think that something's up in that newborn period, we probably wouldn't pick this particular syndrome out of all the other ones, because a lot of actually these genetic syndromes have the similar facial features. So we would, you know, have support through genetics. If there was a heart defect, like a murmur or anything,
mm-hmm.
We would definitely send them to a cardiologist.
So there could be.
So there are some, and then there are definitely developmental delays and language delays and learning disabilities. So all of those need to be supported through things like early intervention and the school system and physical therapy, occupational therapy, speech therapy, those kinds of things.
So there could be heart problems later in life too?
Usually it's something they're born with. They have a defect. The most common is that they have an atrial septal defect that sometimes has to be surgically corrected.
Mm-hmm. And obviously, since this is genetic, well, listen, obviously, again, I'm not sure what I'm talking about here. There's no treatment, right? This is a genetic condition.
There's no treatment for this. And because it can be a wide part of the chromosome, they are starting to obviously do some genetic, trying to reinsert whatever protein that is deficient in some of these kids that has a piece of their chromosome missing. But because this is a wider array of the chromosome, this one's going to be a lot longer before we would be able to, say, insert enough of the cells with this particular part of the chromosome to correct all that these kids face.
Mm-hmm. But they are working on it anyway, huh?
Yes, they are doing some leaps and bounds, actually, so... exciting.
Without being specific, and I'm just speaking in general terms here, have you run across this condition in your practice, Doctor?
I have not.
Mm-hmm. Well, you said it's relatively rare, so.
Correct.
And today's the day, folks, when I learn about it, and I would imagine that the vast majority of our listeners learn about it too. As declared by Governor Tom Wolf, today is Wolf Hirschhorn Syndrome Day here in Pennsylvania. By the way, it's There's no connection between the governor's last name and
I don't know.
researcher, I think a German researcher, Ulrich Wolf.
Yeah.
Along
he
with
named a lot of things actually.
All right. And there was another researcher, Kurt Hirschhorn, and the condition is named after them. They were able to identify it and name it. Doctor, I appreciate the time. I know, gosh, physicians are so busy. Dr. Christiana Morganti, pediatrician with the BHS Pediatric Hospitalists. And are you accepting new patients, doctor?
I am.
Where's your office?
My office is in Butler, right off the Lindora Bridge at where the Pullman Square is.
Oh, yes. I know where that is, yes. Well, again, thanks for talking with us today. We appreciate your expertise on this.
Sure, no problem.
Sure, thanks. So long.
Okay, bye-bye.
That, if you missed the beginning of our segment here, listeners on It's Your Turn today, that was an interview that I taped about an hour ago with Dr. Morganti, a local pediatrician. She wasn't sure she was going to be able to chat with us live at this hour, and we certainly wanted to get a little bit of background. I certainly did. About this syndrome. We're going to chat now with the parent of a beautiful little girl who has Wolf-Hirschhorn syndrome. We say hello to Mark Johnson, who visits with us by telephone. Mark, nice to have you with us today.
Thanks for having me, Dave. Appreciate it.
Your little daughter, Kayla, is how old now, Mark?
She is 4 years old.
I would take a guess that you probably never heard of this either before Kayla, right?
That's correct, yeah. It really took us by surprise, you know, as we were talking. It's a very rare condition. Nobody in our family had heard of it either.
Mm-hmm. Did you know right away that perhaps Kayla was going to have some problems, or was this diagnosed well after she was born?
Yeah, so we had all the initial prenatal checkups and things that everybody, you know, normally has. The only thing they could tell us initially was that she was going to be a little bit small. And we didn't really think anything of it. And it was kind of after she was born that she started to have a lot of respiratory issues initially. And that kind of led them towards ruling other things out, so they decided to do some genetic testing just to make sure of things. And after that testing is whenever we found out that she had the Wolf-Hirschhorn syndrome.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's so rare that even the pediatrician that we just chatted with, I don't know, were you able to hear that interview where you are?
Yeah, I did a little bit, yep.
She said she had not seen it personally in her practice. So you have other kids, right?
We do, yeah. We have twins, Reese and Riley, who are 11 years old. We have Colby, who's 5, and, of course, Kayla. She's our special girl. She's 4.
Mm-hmm. I was heartened to hear Dr. Morganti, because I asked if there were any treatments available, and she says, well, yes, there are, and they're working on more. Have you become aware of that?
The only things that we're aware of is that the support group that we're connected with is starting some, they started a patient registry, and they've done some work there to help with things like seizures and things like that. But we are hearing more and more about these, you know, extra treatments that are going on through the support group. So, yeah, it is very encouraging of things. But as it is right now, we know there is no official cure for this.
So there are some other families here in western Pennsylvania who are dealing with this, Mark?
Yeah, there are. We have connected with at least a couple other families that have a child with the condition, and on more of a statewide and countrywide, we've actually connected with the 4P- support group who really has been just a wealth of knowledge and connecting, you know, all of us together and sharing information and treatments and how to deal with some of the issues that may be impacting our kids.
4P refers to the chromosome that is missing some genetic material. Am I correct on that?
Exactly, yep.
It was interesting to listen to Dr. Morganti indicating that when early research was being done on this, and it really wasn't identified as such until the early 1960s, they thought it was a problem with another chromosome, and then decided now that it was on chromosome 4. All of this is totally beyond me, of course. I imagine you've had to take a crash course in genetics
Yeah, my wife and I always joke that we're a little bit more educated than most people that aren't in the medical field. But yeah, it definitely is a little mind-boggling when you first get into it, for sure.
Are your other kids old enough to be told about this? I guess the twins would be, right? They're 11 years old.
Yeah, they are. They're old enough to know about it, and they are very good with her. We have one daughter, actually, one of our twins, Riley, has autism as well, and she just does very well with her. She knows, how to treat Kayla and how to handle some of her situations that she may have and when she needs to go to the doctor and things like that. So the kids do very well with her. They support her fully.
I haven't seen a picture of your daughter, Kayla, but I did see online a picture of a young girl with this Wolf Hirschhorn syndrome, and oh gosh, she's just a beautiful little kid. Beautiful.
Yep. Yeah. Kayla is. I'll send you a picture, Dave. But yeah, she definitely. Beautiful blue eyes, blonde hair. She's just a joy to be around. She's very. It just brightens your day up. She definitely knows who you are and can definitely just give you that warm feeling. She's just a joy to be around.
I don't know much about child development and family relationships in terms of when kids begin to talk. Is your daughter Kayla verbal?
No, she's not verbal. However, we are starting sign language. However, she's very receptive and she understands, certain commands when we say to her, hey, Kayla, go pick this up and put it in the garbage. She understands that fully. But she's just not able to get it back out to us sometimes, but she's really coming a long way. She actually attends the Watson Institute in Swickley. They do fantastic work with her, all of her therapies that she does, and her classroom teacher. She's just fantastic, and she actually makes a lot of friends with other special kids in the classroom as well, and she's mm-hmm. really social.
I'm trying to think. That's probably D.T. Watson. That was the facility that developed back during the 40s and 50s during the polio epidemic, I believe, right?
Yes, that's right. Actually, there was just a newspaper article not that long ago in the Post-Gazette about them. They just had a milestone, I believe, recently.
I saw that story, yes.
Yep.
And I have...
Actually, Kayla's on the front cover of that. If you were able to pull that up, she's actually on the front
of that story. Oh, I have to try to dig that out. I know it wasn't too long ago. I have an acquaintance of mine who was there as a child, too, because he was a polio victim, and he has only good things to say about the D.T. Watson facility. I don't know whether it's always been in the same place or not. You say it's now in the Swickley area?
Swickley, and they also have another one, I believe, more on the south side of town. They have two locations that I know of.
Does Kayla go there, once a week or a couple of times a week? Or
no, she goes there every day,
day
that the normal kids go. Yeah, she has a van driver that comes, picks her up, and she goes down there every day, always very eager to go to school. We tell her about, hey, it's time to go to school, ready to see your friends. She gets very excited, and she loves going to school, for sure.
Well, what do you think about Governor Tom Wolf declaring this as Wolf Hirschhorn Syndrome Awareness Day? That's a pretty big thing for you guys.
Absolutely. It's really a big step for us as a, Wolf Hirschhorn, a 4P minus support community. I think it really gets, some more awareness out into the medical community, but also, too, more awareness that, each child is different. We have Kayla, who is... she's up walking around and she's able to do things, but other kids, some of them are not as fortunate. So I think, you have a varying range, that there isn't just this textbook meaning and conditions for kids that have this. I think it's, something that will bring more recognition as something that, needs further research and more treatments for the kids that are having some issues with this. So,
yeah.
But yeah, and also it really helps for new parents coming along too, that that need somebody to reach out for, that there is a awareness of a support community out there for them.
Mm-hmm. I asked Dr. Morganti when I talked with her earlier today about are there different degrees of this condition. She said, "Oh yes." Some kids are much more seriously affected than others are.
Well, absolutely.
I'm glad Kayla's up and around and moving. That's good news. And who knows? Maybe she'll start talking one of these days, too. Wouldn't that be
That's what we're hoping and praying for, Dave. We're really looking forward to it.
I don't know whether the research in this condition is going on here locally, you know, like at some of the big research and teaching hospitals in Pittsburgh, or who knows, maybe in even other parts of the world, since it was really outlined and named by a couple of German physicians. I don't know.
Yeah, we know, too, there's a good bit in the international community, too, that we're starting to get connected to through our support group. So, yeah, sky's the limit as far as, you know, more research and development is getting on. And, you know, as we, you know, reach more milestones like this, like having the Wolf Hirschhorn Awareness Day, that, you know, we can get more people involved and, you know, bring more awareness to it, definitely.
I've talked with parents of special kids on a number of occasions here on the program, Mark Johnson, and to a person, because, you know, I say, well, you know, is it tough having a child with special needs? And they say, on the contrary, there's more love there than you can possibly imagine. Have you experienced that too?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Kayla is, you know, she teaches us things as well as challenges us, but, yeah, there, it definitely, you know, brings us together as a family. My parents, my wife's parents, you know, our extended family, brothers and sisters, we all come together for something whenever Kayla's in need of something. And I think that's, you know, just her little special way of, you know, making sure that, you know, we're there to support her and that, you know, we're together as a family. But absolutely, she brings out the best in all of us, for sure. And I mean, you know, that's across the board for everybody in our family.
I will not even begin to read the governor's entire proclamation, but I'd like to read a couple of sentences from it. And you know how these proclamations go. You know, it's whereas, whereas, whereas.
Right.
This is what Governor Wolf had to say in declaring this the Awareness Day for this condition. Whereas, despite these challenging medical complications, children diagnosed with 4P syndrome, Wolf Hirschhorn syndrome, still maintain pleasant and lovable personalities, and whereas there is hope from the dedicated medical professionals and doctors and researchers who continue researching and exploring new therapies and diagnostic tools, therefore it's vital for Pennsylvanians to be aware of this condition, and that's why the governor declared today, April 16th, as 4P Wolf Hirschhorn Syndrome Awareness Day. And I'm certainly learning about it for the first time, and I dare say probably most of our listeners are as well. Mark Johnson and his wife, Megan, know about it firsthand. God bless the two of you, and God bless your family, Mark.
Thank you very much, Dave. I enjoyed talking to you.
Oh, the pleasure was mine, believe me. And give that little one an extra hug for us, okay?
Will do.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Mark. Thanks.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Mark Johnson. That's got to be tough, huh? Yeah. And his wife, Megan, with other kids, too. I've got four girls. Yeah. Twins, and then another girl, and then little Kayla. Well, more to come on it. Have you ever heard of that? No, I haven't run into anybody here at the radio station that ever heard of this syndrome before. More to come on It's Your Turn today. Now, a little bit later, we're going to be chatting with Gary Kleeman on the program today. He's a local musician, and he's got some interesting things to talk about. He's with Christy Kekskamethi. They make up the duo called Cloud Chamber. And I think Gary might have some information on the summer concert series that the Butler Symphony has put together for many, many years, I suppose, despite the snow that's on our forecast tonight. That'll be getting underway in another few weeks. Well, we'll get the details from Gary Kleeman. That'll be in about a half an hour or so. Our next guest, though, is going to be Pat Bell from the Butler Little Theater, and we're going to be talking about this organization. What a rich history this group has. It goes all the way back to around 1940, I believe, uninterrupted. Pretty amazing. Oh, and by the way, tomorrow, Ask the Veterinarian tomorrow. Dr. Dennis Damon will be with us, veterinarian from Suburban Animal Clinic. He'll be here at 12:30 tomorrow, so get your questions ready. I got a bunch of them already as we head into the warm weather season for Ask the veterinarian tomorrow, Dr. Damon. And also tomorrow, guest from First Baptist Christian Church here in Butler. That'll be on the Tuesday edition of It's Your Turn. Okay, we take a break right now and then come back and talk to Pat Bell from the Butler Little Theater. You're listening to It's Your Turn on WISR. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
Rich is just a really, really, really good guy. The term good egg isn't enough to describe him. He's also certified organic and free range. Rich puts the cap back on everything. The toothpaste, the olive oil, the shampoo, everything. He lets his 10-year-old nephew beat him at virtual tennis, even though he can straight up slay his 10-year-old nephew in virtual tennis. When the toilet paper is running low, Rich replaces the roll on the actual holder, not just on the back of the toilet. Rich is texting and driving. Rich? No. What are you doing, Rich? I was just telling everyone how great you are. Texting and driving makes good people look bad. Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location downtown Butler to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary. And the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler. Welcome back. Well, our scheduled guest has not arrived yet. We're expecting Pat Bell momentarily. And let me tell you, I don't know, were you with us on Friday for that interview we had with Jim Diamond about the history of Pullman Standard here in Butler? I was just mesmerized. Jim Diamond, of course, a former employee. He was an engineer at Pullman for 20-some years, I believe he said, until it closed rather suddenly in 1981. But he's a real treasure trove of knowledge about the history of the plant all the way back to the founding of Pullman Standard in 1901. Started out not as Pullman Standard, but rather Standard, the Standard Steel Car Company, founded by John Hansen. Have you ever wondered where Hansen Avenue came from? Yep, named after him, John Hansen. And Diamond Jim Brady, they were the two founders of what eventually became known as Pullman Standard. That's because somewhere in the, I don't remember the dates, Jim Diamond had all of these on Friday, or early 30s, I believe. Pullman, George Pullman's company, they were most famous for making sleeper cars. Pullman sleeper cars. Based in Chicago, they merged with the Standard Steel Car Company, and from that point on, it was Pullman Standard here in Butler. Employed close to 3,000 people at its peak. And even when it shut down in 1981, still had about 2,500 employees. Amazing that Butler, the city of Butler, was able to withstand that economic thunderbolt, because that's a lot of jobs you lose and a lot of tax revenue all at one time. But survived they did, and most of the area of the plant, 225 acres, has now been redeveloped. You know, we have the Pullman Square Shopping Center, we've got Pullman Business Center, there are several businesses down there now, the new multimodal transit authority of the Butler Transit Agency, the bus is down there now. Soon to expand because they're going to be building a natural gas fueling station down there, compressed gas. They already have half of the fleet of buses that run on that, but they're going to be building their own fueling station down there. And, of course, Just last week, the official groundbreaking for Allegheny Health Network's Cancer Center down in that location, too. There's still some space that needs to be redeveloped, but much of it is now going to be vibrant once again. And, of course, as Jim Diamond was telling us on Friday, the Italianate architecture main office building is still there. It's the only building that remains from the Pullman plant. It's been vacant now since the plant closed. Been a number of suggestions as to how it might be redeveloped, and there have been a number of attempts to get it started. Most recently, a plan that looked pretty serious about converting it into senior citizen apartments, but that fell through and never came to fruition. They were really ready to go on that. I saw the renderings and the drawings and everything else, but never happened. So we'll see. Hopefully they can save that building as the last remnant. And as Jim Diamond said, he and a group of other former Pullman employees are looking for suggestions as to what might be done to make sure that the history of that mighty plant is not forgotten. I mean, here we are already almost 40 years since the plant closed, 1981. What is that, 20 or 37 years? Yeah. So it's a long time ago. And there's a whole generation now that has no idea what a mighty economic engine that was and how many railroad cars we turned out every single day here in Butler. It was just a great program. I really enjoyed talking with Jim Diamond about that. So that was last Friday. We've got other stuff coming up later this week, in addition to our Ask the Veterinarian program tomorrow. We'll have guests from the Pittsburgh North Regional Chamber of Commerce with us later this week. And we're also going to be talking about the closing of the Performing Arts Series at Butler County Community College. That'll be wrapping up soon, as will the spring semester within the next few weeks, as we're now into the second half of April as of today. And we'll have lots of other stuff to talk about, too, as we move through the week. Okay, we'll take a break here, and we'll see if we can get any more information on the arrival of our scheduled guest for today. We'll be back to talk more on the Monday edition of It's Your Turn right after these words.
On average, humans walk 100,000 miles during the course of their lives. So it makes sense our feet and ankles may suffer wear and tear. Doctors William Saar and Christopher Edwards of the Foot and Ankle Team at Tri-Rivers Musculoskeletal Centers diagnose and treat numerous injuries and conditions to help get you back on your feet. Their approach to orthopedic foot and ankle care offers a wide range of conservative to surgical treatment options. To learn more, visit TriRiversMSK.com. Tri-Rivers Musculoskeletal Centers partner with the Butler community for more than 20 years.
After defeating the Philadelphia Flyers 5-1 in Game 3 of their opening round series in Philadelphia, the Penguins will stay right there in Philadelphia for Game 4 and an opportunity to take a commanding 3-1 lead in the series. We'll have the game for you beginning with a pregame show at 6:30, puck drop at 7 on the Penguins Radio Network.
Pittsburgh Penguins Stanley Cup playoff action brought to you in part by Thrower Concrete, Monday Shoes, Camisa's Auto Body, Fairground Market, Mazzani's Beans and Cream, the law firm of Dylan McCandless King Coulter & Graham, Robert Stevens Jewelers, Butler Agway, and Bill's Interior Grooming.
Welcome back, good friends. It's the Monday edition of It's Your Turn here on WISR, the gloomy, wet, chilly Monday edition. I want to tell you, you get a couple of days in the low 80s, and you go back to this stuff, and you just want to jump off a bridge. What do you think, Pat Bell?
I think that's exactly what we want to do.
I mean, we waited so long, and we finally got, you know, it was 82 degrees, I think, on Friday and around 80 on Saturday. And now here we are. It's 38 degrees out there, for goodness sakes.
And it's April. If this were in March, we'd all be saying, Pennsylvania, this is what we get.
But not only that, it's the second half of April as
yes,
of today.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, okay, April 1st, April 2nd, we can deal with a little bit of this, but that's very strange. Hopefully not too much more. Of course, we've said that about three or four times now. Certainly this is going to be the last snow we see.
Exactly.
We want to talk with Pat Bell about a real treasure that I'm just afraid a lot of people in our area are not aware of, and that's the Butler Little Theater. Would you agree with me? There's a lot of people that have never been there.
I totally agree with you. I'm always surprised when I'm out in public, and just the other day I was at a business, and they were talking to me, asking me something, and they said, oh, well, where are you producing a show? And I said, Butler Little Theater. And they said, I've never been there. That always surprises me, for as long as the theater has been in existence, mm-hmm. that there are still people that don't go. And I think one of the reasons why I wanted to come and talk today was to, you know, encourage people, not only Butler Little Theater, but I will mention right now, we have the symphony that is just absolutely spectacular here in Butler, and we have MTG, which has been around for many years, and we have a new theater company, Hobnob. So for as small as a community as we are, we have a wealth per capita of the arts, and people need to go out and support them.
Hobnob has been doing some classical stuff. Mm-hmm. MTG, of course, does musical theater.
Yeah.
They actually branched off from the Butler Little Theater mm-hmm. Way back when. The Musical Theater Guild held its 50th anniversary a few years ago. A little theater, 75 years.
75, a couple of years. This is our 77th season, yeah.
So I said 1941 when I was promoting the fact that you were going to be here. And that's right, I believe. That's mm-hmm. when it started. Most amazing thing is it's been uninterrupted.
Yes, uninterrupted, even during hard times. Yes, yeah. They at least managed to get one or two programs or plays in during the drier spells to keep it going and keep it alive. And those people who started it generations ago really were loyal to the community, to give them something to go to on a Saturday night before movies and Netflix and Hulu and all the stuff that we can be entertained by. They gave quality entertainment, and that's what's still going on.
I've seen photographs, and they're on display, actually, on the walls at the Butler Little Theater of some of the founders. I never knew Laura Bell Harrington. I knew the late Peg Howard.
Yes.
But there's one picture of them sitting there scraping old concrete off bricks as they tried to renovate what was once a carriage house. And
yes,
that's what they turned
exactly.
into the little theater.
Yeah. Exactly. And when I have people come in to visit me from California or Florida or Colorado or any of my relatives around the United States or friends, one of the first places I take them is the Butler Little Theater because of its history, because of its quaintness, and people who come into the Little Theater from outside love the community feel that it has and the flow of friendships that have been, wow, years and years created.
I have, I've served on the board for numerous years, but it never fails when I'm at a show. When there's somebody who you're going out and say, how'd you like it? I said, it was great. I was never here before. They've come perhaps because they know a cast member who's in a show. And I say, you've never been here before. No, I never have. And they always say, well, I'm coming back.
Yes,
you know?
Yeah.
Well, it's important that we get the word out because this is live theater.
Mm-hmm.
It's different from going to the movies.
Mm-hmm.
If you went to the Butler Little Theater on a Saturday and then went back again on Wednesday of next week to see the show, it would be a little bit different.
It is a little bit different because it is live, and the mm-hmm. actors have to react to each other. They have to react to things happening on stage. Sometimes they're prepared for, sometimes they're not prepared for. And that gives it its sense of in the moment and being present during theater or during art. To be present in the art itself mm-hmm. is what, to me, makes the magic of the theater. So.
Yeah. I've had the occasion to visit other community theaters in a couple of other parts of the country and parts of the world, and that makes me realize even more how lucky we are.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah.
And also not only the support from our patrons, but also the support of audiences to take a night and come to see. And I thought one of the things that I would like to tell people, because they come to the theater, it's a magical moment, Dave. You know that. You walk in, everything's done. There's a set, there's music, there's lights. What they don't realize is there's a play reading committee that already for next year will be starting to read the plays. The plays that went on this season were actually looked at the year before. So a play just doesn't happen. It doesn't, just in the 6 weeks even, there's planning and sorting, and the play reading committee really looks at the community, things that have been done, not done, trying to expand the horizons of the theater, and they spend 20, 30 plays that they read, and then they put them, they water them down to about eight, and then those go to the board for voting. And so really, the play that people will come see when it opens May 4th, the newest play, Vanya and Sonia and Masha and Spike, that play actually started gelling a year ago.
That's a relatively new show, and it's the final one of the current season. When I say relatively, I'm not quite sure when it was on Broadway, but it's relatively new. One thing you have to worry about with newer shows is whether or not it's been released for amateur production.
Right.
Sometimes it hasn't been, and you might want to do a show, but you can't because they're still trying to rake in the cash from professional productions, from equity
production. But a lot of times, by the time it's on Broadway or off Broadway, it's still not released because there are still venues who are professional venues throughout our country.
Touring company
who get first dibs. So it's usually several years later before a small theater like ours, plus the costs, you know, not only for Butler Little Theater, but for Musical Theater Guild to do theirs, there's costs involved that I don't think sometimes an audience really looks at the whole package of what a production would cost versus just picking a play that has been around for many years.
Every time you do a Neil Simon show at the Butler Little Theater, you have to pay Neil Simon royalties, and that's for every night you do it, too.
Yes, exactly. Yeah,
and
exactly.
They're not cheap, so. It is expensive, and it takes a lot of work, and as far as I know, the little theaters, it's all amateur, right? There's nobody paid.
Yes, it is amateur. When I'm in California and I speak to several people who are still doing theater out there or who are in the movie industry, and they can't believe that there's still nonprofit theaters around the country, and therefore we can't bring in SAG actors. We can't bring in the professional actors because we're not allowed, and they're not allowed to act here. So when you take that equation out, and then you come to the Butler Little Theater, and you see people who are from the community, work in the community, raising families in the community, do quality theater, that's what always just warms my heart and blows my mind, that these are people that you talk to every day, and yet they get up there and they bring characters to life for everybody to experience something.
I went to a community theater in New Hampshire, and this was quite a few years ago now, and I just, for the life of me, I can't think of the name of that. It was a summer theater, and it was in Tamworth, New Hampshire, which is a tiny village. I mean, it's smaller than Carn City, you know, it's really tiny. Beautiful, of course, in the White Mountains of New Hampshire.
Absolutely.
And they had a rare combination. They did a summer schedule, and they had some amateurs from the community, and they also had some professional actors who had come up from Boston. Now, how they were able to swing that, I have no idea. Mm-hmm. I went past the theater, which was in an old barn, a couple of days before I was going to see the show, and they were all out in the yard painting scenery. The amateurs and the professionals alike were having a good time. And by the way, the show that I saw was absolutely horrendous. I can't believe it. It was a pretty hefty price, you know, because they had some of these professional actors, and you know, it's in a resort area of the White Mountains of New Hampshire, and it was just horrible.
And you know, it boggles the mind because when you go into a venue like that where they expound on how their professionalism is and their professional actors, you have a raise of expectation. And so it not only are you let down, but it really let down when it doesn't meet a standard, especially when you have a small community theater that you go to and you find delight in all the time.
Yeah, well, believe me, those of us who were there on that trip, we were sorely disappointed, that's for sure. We're talking with Pat Bell. She's been active in the Butler Little Theater for many years.
Well, yeah, many years, but then took a long hiatus. So really just about the last 7 to 10, I guess, I've been back. Mm-hmm.
So. And your husband's on the board right now, right?
He just went off the board last year, but he was on the board for 6 years, yes. Mm-hmm. In fact, he's at the theater right now helping Art Black finish up the set for this production. So
we'll be talking about this production in some detail a little bit later, a couple of weeks down the road, I think.
Right before opening night.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not familiar with it, Vanya and Sonia and Mashin's bike. It has to be at least a takeoff on Chekhov, right?
Exactly, exactly. And I won't give a lot away because you'll have many of the cast here in a couple of weeks to talk about it. But to whet the appetite, it's about a family whose parents have died, and two of the family members have stayed in the farmhouse, and one has gone to Hollywood and New York to make her fame. That sister comes back with a boy toy named Spike, and hilarity ensues. So it's about family, loyalty, dysfunction, and love. That's all I'll say. And it's a comedy.
Elements of several of Anton Chekhov's plays there.
Yes.
Uncle Vanya and that.
Right. You don't have to know Chekhov to get any of the jokes because they're so well written. But, yes, it's totally a takeoff on things that he did.
Now we'll look forward to learning a little bit more about that in a couple of weeks. The Little Theater has expanded its offerings over the past few years, not just the regular five productions from the fall into late spring, but they've been doing Reader's Theater now. They've been doing improv nights.
Right. And then we opened up to coffee house venues where someone will hear or know of an artist. One of the favorite things that came out was a magician. He was here last year about the same time, and then he just did another show. The Reader's Theater was brought to us through Amy Dittman, and her husband, Amy Dittman's on the board. And that's a delightful evening because the scripts are in full view, and they sit and actually do a whole show based on the scripts, and I've been able to attend a couple, and they're absolutely lovely. And like you said, improv night, usually headed up by Shannon Donovan, and that's when a lot of the young people come out, and it's so great to see young talent on the stage.
That's for sure. And will there be, to the best of your knowledge, a summer youth production again this year?
Yes, there's definitely a summer youth. I'm not sure which one it is at this point, but there will be a summer youth production. I think if you ever go to the Butler Little Theater website and Facebook page, you'll always get the latest news on what's happening with the theater.
We're talking with Pat Bell about what I think is a real treasure here in this community, and that's the Butler Little Theater. Uninterrupted theater, locally, since 1941, and that includes the World War II years. I talked with the late Peg Howard once. She and her husband, Eddie, were. Did you know either of them?
No, I did not.
They were absolute treasures. Absolute treasures. Yeah. They were both very much involved. Eddie Howard was... Ed Howard was an architect. Howard Burt Hill, if you remember architectural firm. Well, he was the Howard in Howard Burt Hill. And he helped the theater in many design projects and so on and so forth. And his wife, Peg, was wonderful as well. And I talked to them. And they said it was very difficult during World War II because... there were hardly any men around. You know, everybody was off at the war.
Exactly.
And they actually had to go up to Slippery Rock University. And the only reason they had some men there, there was some kind of a cadet training program there for aviators or something or other. So they would utilize some of those guys. And they actually produced the shows up there, too, for a couple of years so they could have some entertainment, kind of like a hometown USO.
And so even back then, they were being innovative to keep the theater alive.
Well, they had to. There weren't any guys around here to cast in a show.
Unbelievable. Yeah. That is, but that adds to the rich history of a theater that's been here for so long.
It does, yeah. There was a time that the Butler Little Theater did a couple of summer shows, too, out at Marine State Park. This was before my time. Okay. Must have been before yours
Definitely.
As well. I know they did it for several years, and the only reason they stopped was because the barn that they had used for this summer stock production was flooded whenever they built Lake Arthur.
So we got Lake Arthur, but we lost a barn theater.
We lost the barn theater, and we lost the little theater's summer production. That would be tough to maintain today anyway.
Yeah.
To run a full schedule, you know, from October to May, and then try to find people to do summer shows. Cause
right.
A lot of time commitment.
You know, but the board at the Butler Little Theater constantly is looking for new ways to welcome the community and to do more things. But, yeah, they have a pretty full plate, especially when you add in improv night, Reader's Theater, and then the coffee houses.
You rely a great deal on the generosity of patrons and contributors to help put on a season of five full-length plays every year, plus all this other stuff that you do.
Yes, we have different patrons that we call out to, and they're important because they help us get revenue that will carry us through. But also, as little as you might think, coming to the theater, buying a ticket for the show, you know, full audiences is what helps support us. It's not just to have an audience so that the actors have someone to act to. That's our financial support, too. So when someone says, oh, I don't know how to support the theater, come to a show. And there you go. You've supported us.
Well, there's not a bad seat in the house, I can tell you that, because when it was named the Butler Little Theater, they named it well. There are seven rows of seats. So the last row is what, G?
Yeah.
Row G?
Row G.
You can't possibly be any further than seven rows from the stage. It holds about, what, 160, something like that?
I think it's a little over 140, 150, yeah.
In that neighborhood. Reserve seating for all the main shows.
Yes. And one of the new things that they started was you can reserve your seats online now. You can still call the theater. You can still do it the original way. But it's very easy now to go on, click on, get your theater tickets. You can print them out, or just once you have reserved a seat, it goes into the computer system. And when you show up at the theater, you give them their name, you're already on the tablet, and you're escorted to your seat. So it can't be easy.
New way of doing things, huh?
New way. Oh, boy, yeah. With all the little bugs and everything that go with that. But it still shows that the little theater is progressing, and they are looking forward. Never staying still, always looking forward to the future, always seeing what can we do better for not only our theater, but our theater as entertainment for the community.
I can only think of Laura Bell Harrington and Peg Howard and the late Margot Pitts, some of the giants of the little theater, if they knew that you now made your ticket reservations online via computer, they'd go out of their gourd.
But the names you just mentioned, such rich names, and people who are still connected with the theater, who were connected a long time ago.
Mm-hmm. Many more. I don't mean to start naming people because I never get them all in. By the way, it's a nonprofit organization, right? So any gifts are tax deductible?
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. And like I said, it's, you know, kind of a chance to just do theater talk to remind people. Plus, now, having said that it's going to maybe snow tomorrow, I don't know, but by opening weekend, it'll be a beautiful night. It's a wonderful time to come down and see a good show. But not only this show, but starting next year, a whole new array of talent and shows forward.
Will that be announced?
I would say shortly, yes. What has happened is the board has voted on the shows, but now they'll open it up to directors and producers and anyone working once they announce the shows. Then they open it up to see who might be involved or want to be involved in the shows for the next year. But, yes, it'll be announced here fairly shortly.
They call that a playbill in the theater business, playbill for the new season.
Exactly.
Well, many of our cultural groups, and you named several of them, Pat Bell, they are wrapping up the season. The Butler Symphony just had its last concert a couple of nights ago, Saturday night. And, you know, you need to take a break for the people who perform all this art, who create all this art. They need a little bit of a break over
And plus refurbish your surroundings. They use the summer to paint. They use the summer to put in new systems. And, rebuild the foundation for next year.
Good to talk to you today, Pat.
Very nice. Thank you so much for letting me come in for, for this little chat. Sure. Appreciate it.
That's what we do here.
Yeah.
More to come on It's Your Turn. We'll take a break here and then be back to talk to our next guest. We're scheduled to chat with Gary Kleeman on the program next. By the way, coming up tomorrow, it's an Ask the Veterinarian Day. Dr. Dennis Damon will be here from Suburban Animal Clinic, and we'll be taking your questions about your pets starting at 12:30 on tomorrow's program. I'm Dave Malarkey. Stick around. We'll be back in just a moment or so with the next segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR.
On average, humans walk 100,000 miles during the course of their lives. So it makes sense our feet and ankles may suffer wear and tear. Doctors William Saar and Christopher Edwards of the Foot and Ankle Team at Tri-Rivers Musculoskeletal Centers diagnose and treat numerous injuries and conditions to help get you back on your feet. Their approach to orthopedic foot and ankle care offers a wide range of conservative to surgical treatment options. To learn more, visit TriRiversMSK.com. Tri-Rivers Musculoskeletal Centers partner with the Butler community for more than 20 years.
When it's time to make funeral arrangements, more people than ever are asking about cremation. They're asking, is it right for us? Is it the kind of funeral arrangement that we'll feel comfortable with? Tell you what, ask Thompson Miller Funeral Home in Butler about cremation. They'll help you to understand. They'll answer all of your questions. Is it appropriate for your family? What kind of funeral service is appropriate? What's the cost? These are all good questions, and Thompson Miller will help you with some answers. Cremation offers three advantages: simplicity, convenience, and it's local. Thompson Miller Cremation Service is provided right here in Butler at our own newly created facility. We assure you that your loved one will never leave our care at any point in the process. So let's talk it over privately right here at Thompson Miller, or call us at 724-287-3706, 287-3706, or online at www.thompson-miller.com. Thompson Miller, at the corner of East North and McCain Streets in downtown Butler. Thompson Miller, time-honored excellence.
Welcome back, good friends. Nice to have you with us on the It's Your Turn program. Boy, it's a lousy day out there. We won't beat around the bush. I guess I don't have to tell anybody that if you've been outside. It's chilly, it's wet, it's gloomy, and it's all the more difficult to take after a couple of days of low 80s, which we enjoyed last Friday and Saturday. Well, it happens. We'll have to make our own sunshine today, and I guarantee you we'll do that on the next segment of the program. Our guests join us here in the studio. We say hello to, once again, Gary Kleeman. Gary, good to see you.
Nice good to see you, Dave. Thanks for having us.
And Christy Kekskamethi as well. Christy, good to see you again.
Thank you, Dave. Nice to see you.
These two very talented musicians make up a group, a duo, called Cloud Chamber. You haven't changed your name, have you?
Nope, we have not.
I asked them as I was bringing them into the studio here and getting everybody mic'd up and everything if they have a lot of bookings, and you said you're going to play at the Three Rivers Arts Festival down in Pittsburgh this year?
That's correct, yeah.
That's pretty good booking, right?
It's a very good booking,
Have you played there before?
No, we have not.
They're very selective, you know. They don't bring any Tom, Dick, and Harry
in. Well, we figure that's the case, and we're very proud to play there.
Tell listeners who have not heard you, or don't know anything about you, what sort of music do you play, Christy? This is going to take a little while because it's hard to pigeonhole this wonderful duo.
That's true. Although we specialize, I guess you could say, in jazz and folk music, mm-hmm. British Isles folk music, American folk rock. Yes, Joni mm-hmm. Mitchell.
Sure.
Bob Dylan, all kinds of different things.
I've heard them play on a number of different occasions, and it's really terrific to hear. First of all, this is my kind of music. I love this music. But to hear it played by, and I guess I didn't say yet, guitar and violin, right?
Yes.
Now, this would not ordinarily be the musical combination you would think of doing Joni Mitchell, but I want to tell you it works, Gary.
Well, I think one of the things that's unique about the sound we have is the combination of the 12-string guitar and a violin. The violin acts as the voice, and the 12-string acts as the 12-string.
Yes.
So
everything
else. Yeah, everything else. And I think it's a wonderful sound, and it's, of course, my distinct pleasure to play with a violinist of this quality.
Thank you, Gary.
We should mention that Christy Kekskometi, you're still in the Butler Symphony, are you not?
Yes, I am. We had our final concert on Saturday evening.
Yes, congratulations on wrapping up a wonderful season, and you did the Carmina Burana.
We did. Quite a piece.
Yeah, it's a rousing piece.
It is.
Still probably people stomping their feet after listening to that on Saturday night.
I hope so. I am.
Yeah. Is that a tough piece to play for a violin?
Yes, it has some tough parts, a lot of rhythmic complexities.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, it is, but it's fun.
And you mentioned you play 12-string guitar, Gary Kleeman.
Absolutely.
That I don't play guitar. I know what one looks like, and I know most of them don't have 12 strings. So what's the difference? Tell us about that.
I play 6 and 12-string guitar. 6-string guitar, of course, is a traditional guitar. I play both acoustic and electric, but a 12-string guitar has 6 harmonic strings. So when you're playing the strings, whether you're playing fingerstyle or with a pick, you're playing 2 strings at once. The sound is probably most closely identified with some early Beatles work by George Harrison.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, Roger McGuinn of the Byrds, one of my seminal influences. It's a much richer harp-like sound. It's the sound you hear in songs like Turn, Turn, Turn and Mr. Tambourine Man and various recordings where you hear a very rich, resonant guitar sound as opposed to a normal 6-string sound.
Roger McGuinn of the Byrds, by the way, who did those 2 pieces that you just mentioned there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When you include these songs on your program, you're able to do that? Do you have to pay royalties? Are they open at this point? Because some of these are pretty old.
Well, we had to pay royalties on the tunes we recorded. Mm-hmm. But when we perform live, no.
I was just talking with Pat Bell about that. A lot of people don't realize that the royalties that you have to pay, and rightly so, to the composers and the artists.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Every song we play here on WISR,
you're paying
we have
for
to pay royalties mm-hmm. for, and some of them go back into the 50s, most of them go back into the 50s and 60s. So.
Mm-hmm.
Got to pay royalties, yeah.
The ones we have that go back to the 1500s, fortunately, we're safe on that.
That's right. Public domain there.
How did the two of you get together, and how long have you been performing together, Christy?
We met as members of the Butler County Symphony Orchestra Board of Directors.
Mm-hmm.
That's where we first met, and I think in the summer concert series.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that would have been 2008? Maybe, something
like that.
Yeah,
sounds right. Yeah,
10 years ago?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sounds right.
And you decided you were going to team up and see what happened, huh?
Gary had an idea, and it was Gary's idea, and I went along with it, and here we are,
mm-hmm.
happily.
Did you have to arrange music for these 2 instruments, or is that commercially available, Gary Kleeman?
No, we do our own arrangements. We write arrangements. We do head charts. We work off of what jazz players know as lead sheets. We do a fair amount of improvisation, and we are also doing some original material as well.
You know, most of our listeners are going to be overwhelmed by this because, I played an instrument in the high school orchestra. Haven't touched it since. I can't even imagine doing your own arrangements and playing off lead sheets and all that sort of thing.
Well, it's kind of a passion of mine. I think a passion of Chrissy's as well.
Well, you've both been trained. Right? Where'd you go to school?
Columbia University in New York. My training is a major in philosophy and a minor in music. And Chrissy's education in music is more advanced than that. She went to
Manhattan School of Music, which
is
a music conservatory in New York City.
Wow.
Yeah. We have the New York City connection in common, although we were not there contemporaneously, because I think I'm, 100 years older than you?
That's not true.
Are you going to be performing locally this summer in addition? Well, Three Rivers Arts Festival.
Yeah. Chrissy knows about the stuff we're doing on the road, and I have some stuff here on the local stuff. We're doing, of course, our Butler Symphony Summer Concert Series again this year, all through the summer to Butler County Symphony Office on Main Street, which has kind of become a fixture of performance and cultural performance in Butler County. So we lovingly call it the Butler Symphony Summer Concert Series. This year it's going to be every Friday from 12 till 1. It was on Thursdays, but we've moved it to Fridays. And it's going to run from June 1st through September 28th. That series involves performers of all different stripes and types of music. We have classical, jazz, folk, various other performers. So some of the performers we have lined up for that are Katie Morrow, who's a cellist. The four principals, that's our four principal string players from the Butler County Symphony, including Christy, are going to be doing a classical string quartet, which will be just absolutely stunning, being as it's our four principal string players doing what I think of as the essence of a classical sound, a string quartet. We have Nanette Solomon on piano, who's part of the faculty of Slippery Rock. We have a young, talented pianist named Zoe Kekskemethi, a classical pianist. We have a classical trio called the NKC Trio. We have Tom Panay, who everyone knows. Mm-hmm. We have the Collision Band, who everyone doesn't know. we have Tom Wotus, and Jim Cunningham will be playing jazz with his quartet. Jim's a fixture of the symphony and the local music scene.
Great trumpet player.
Great trumpet player, yeah. And Jim's a great friend of mine, and his brother was a great drummer. And Cloud Chamber will be performing July 6th and September 14th for that series. June 16th, we'll be playing at the Butler Library Courtyard. And that's part of the kickoff for the Butler Library Summer Reading Program. Their theme this year is music. We always enjoy teaming up with the library. It's a good cause. This will be primarily aimed at young children and youth readers. It'll be an all-day party from about 10 a.m. to about 5 or 6 in the afternoon, with Cloud Chamber providing the music and various activities for children and snacks and a magician. And who else did we decide we'd bring in?
Sword swallower,
lion tamer,
yes,
an elephant on a trapeze.
The elephant will be good.
The elephant on the trapeze will be one of the big things. Yes. There.
Nice venue for that, weather permitting, outdoors in the courtyard there.
Yeah, and that's a great facility, and it's, you know, what they do at the library with youth programs. They're headed by the youth librarian, Peter Best, and he does a great job with all that. So we'll be playing the 16th at the library courtyard. And then we have...
Is that May 16th, did you say?
June 16th.
June 16th.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And then we have the Frick. And it's our return to the Frick. They seem to like us there.
Yes.
And...
we like them.
Yeah. Very nice to play there. And Washington, D.C. for a special event in the Three Rivers Arts Festival. Mm-hmm. But Christy knows more about those than I do.
So the Frick Museum down in Pittsburgh?
The Frick Museum is on Saturday, May 5th. So that's coming right up. There's an event called, Music in the Museum. They have a new exhibition there for the summer, Van Gogh, Monet, Degas, the Mellon Collection of French Art from the Virginia Museum of Fine Arts. So we're planning to promote that. There are three, actually, duos. 11 to 4 is the event. It's open to the public. We're playing at 11 a.m., Cloud Chamber. The Frick.
That's at the Henry Clay Frick Mansion, which has now been turned into a museum.
Right, and it's in the art museum. It's in the rotunda in the art museum itself. So, that's beautiful place.
And if you haven't been there, it's absolutely worth going to see. That's the last, I think, the last surviving mansion on Mansion Row on Forbes Avenue.
Yeah, it's a beautiful, beautiful,
it's a beautiful
property.
Facility.
I'm trying to think of the name of it, and it's right on the tip of my tongue, and I can't think of it right now. I know it started with a C. Maybe it'll come to me, and maybe it won't.
No, you're right.
Clayton?
Clayton.
Clayton.
That's it.
Yeah. Thank you, Christy. Yes, yeah. Thank you. Yeah. I guess when you're that rich, you name your house.
Yes.
It's not just an address, but it has a name.
Yes, exactly.
Wonderful that that's turned into a museum. What a nice venue for the two of you.
It's wonderful.
Yeah.
Yes, we love it there.
Let's take a break. I want to talk a bit more about this music. It's really good stuff, folks. I give personal testimony because I've seen the two of them perform a number of times. So we'll pick up our conversation in a minute. One of our sponsors on the program today is Going Postal,
Butler. Folks, have you heard about this place? It's your friendly neighborhood shipping center. They're just off Newcastle Road behind King's and Villa Grande Restaurant, and it's really a neat service. I've utilized their services. You know what a bag it is sometime when you got to mail a package, especially at the last minute, and you find a box the right size, too big, too small. Where's the bubble wrap, the mailing labels, that special tape? Let them do it for you because that's what they do there. They package your items for shipping. Your friendly neighborhood shipping center, going postal, Butler. By the way, you can send your stuff any way you want. U.S. Postal Service, FedEx, UPS, your choice. They have other services, too. They do copying, scanning, faxing. You can even rent a temporary mailbox there if you so desire. And they have a notary, too, if you need to get something notarized before it's shipped out. They package your items for shipping. Pretty neat, eh? Call them for more info, 724-841-0044. Again, they're right behind the Kings and Villa Grande restaurants. You head into the Shockey Mini Storage Complex there and just follow the signs and bada-bing, bada-bing, you're there. Going Postal Butler, your friendly neighborhood shipping center. Also want to remind you, we told you last Friday, this is the last day. In fact, it's the last afternoon for the big Friday the 13th sale at Miller's Shoes, 215 South Main Street in downtown Butler. Now, they're open till 5 today, so you still have time to stop in. 20% off the original price on so many of their shoes, including all of their famous name brand athletic shoes, Timberland waterproof boots, Rockport shoes, and many more, too. Last day today, the last day of the Friday the 13th sale at Miller's Shoes. Are the lottery numbers in? Can we just take care of those right now, and then we'll be done with the breaks? Okay. Pat Parker will bring you that information from Lottery Headquarters in Harrisburg, and we'll be back to talk more with Christy and Gary. You're on It's Your Turn on WISR right after these words.
Midday lottery numbers for you today. The pick 2 is 84, 84. The pick 3 is 426, 426. The pick 4 is 3652. The pick 5, 41380. The wild ball for each of those is 0. And the treasure hunt is 4, 9, 11, 14, and 24. Estimated jackpot for tomorrow's treasure hunt is $10,000.
Welcome back, good friends, and we welcome a couple of good friends with us here in the studio right now, Christy Kekskometi and Gary Kleeman. Together, they make up Cloud Chamber, a duo, two very talented musicians, and as you've heard, they're going to be performing in a number of locales here in the region during the coming months. Christy, did I hear you say Washington, D.C. as well?
Yes, indeed. We're very excited about that. We are playing at an event hosted by the American Academy of Political and Social Science.
Hmm.
Yes. And for those of us who don't know, it's because I didn't know much about it, that's a group created in 1889 to advance research on contemporary political, economic, social, and policy issues. And this is their big event. It's the Daniel Patrick Moynihan Prize.
Former senator.
Yes.
Well-known senator. The late Daniel Patrick Moynihan.
Yes. And since 2008, this prize has been given out to, let me quote from the website. The Moynihan Prize recognizes social scientists, public officials, and other leaders in the public arena who champion the use of informed judgment to improve public policy. So, we were invited to play at this event. John P. Holdren is a physicist. He is the recipient of the prize this year, and there's a lecture and a cocktail hour and then a dinner after. It's an invitation-only event, actually, but Gary and I were asked to play for the cocktail hour, so we're very happy about that.
Yeah, very nice. Sounds
right up your alley as a philosophy major here, Gary Kleeman.
Our name is Cloud Chamber, which is an early particle physics detection device, and the honoree this year is a physicist. So,
yes.
Our name fits in as well.
Well, thanks for sharing that with most of us who would not have known that. Part of a nuclear reaction, Cloud Chamber?
Cloud Chamber is the earliest version of a super collider like the Hadron Super Collider in France and Switzerland. The absolute earliest version of that is a tabletop device called a Cloud Chamber. But Cloud Chamber also is resonant of things like clouds and chamber music and has Sounds all sorts cool. of evocative, poetic connotations that we enjoy as well.
What's the venue in D.C. for this?
It's the Willard Hotel.
Oh, wow. We used to have one of those at Butler.
Yes. The whole event is at the hotel itself. But so
I was never in the Willard. It's long gone now. But what was the Willard Hotel in Butler?
Yeah, there was. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's terrific. That's you guys have got quite a string of really great bookings here this year.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, we're very proud of it.
Three Rivers Arts Festival, the Frick, and in Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
But you'll be able to hear the first listeners at the library, right? Is that your first local
the
performance?
The first one will be at the Frick, I think. Right? Oh, locally in Butler?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the first local one will be June 16th at
yes,
the library.
At the library.
Yeah.
And when do you know the date yet for your performance with the Symphony Summer Concert Series?
July 6th and September 14th, we'll be playing at the Symphony Hall. That's after the June 6th performance at the library. The Frick is earlier than that. D.C. is earlier than that. And, of course, Three Rivers is in?
Sunday, June 3rd, 2 to 3 p.m.
I know it was in early June.
The acoustic stage at Gateway Center.
Yeah. Well, naturally, the acoustic stage.
Yes.
I hope so.
Yeah.
This is music that you want to listen to, folks. You can whisper a little bit if you want to. On one occasion, I heard the two of these two playing at a party, and it was great. It wasn't exactly background music for me because I went over there and stood there and listened to them because I was so entranced by the music.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You write your own stuff, too?
Yeah, we do some composition as well, and we're incorporating more of that into what we do. It's always been a sort of hobby or passion of mine to do that, so we're incorporating more original material into what we do. So our music runs the gamut. I think our earliest tunes go back to the 1400s, and they move forward in time, inclusive of a lot of 20th century jazz. And how old am I now? So I think we classify mine as 19th century music, don't we?
Oh, no, we don't.
We classify it as 20th century?
Yes.
Okay, all
like,
right.
You know.
Very good.
As of last week.
Have you written any of your own stuff as well, Christy? Or?
I'm working on it. Gary's much better at it than I am.
I just can't imagine. I can't imagine how you'd start on that, to be honest with you. I don't know.
Whistling a tune.
Something, an idea comes to you when you're at lunch and you scribble a few notes down on a napkin or something like that?
Yeah, I think that's the way most songwriters work. It works with a small idea. Mm-hmm. And then part of what you do with a small idea is you learn how to extrapolate that into a full idea. And the better teachers and the better training you have, the larger toolkit you have with which to do that. I should probably give a shout-out to my mentor and great friend, Vincent James Anzotti, who was a legendary instructor here at Butler High and who equipped a lot of us at an early age to understand that toolkit and to understand music theory. And a shout out to Vince for a good recovery from a recent surgery. But it's a matter of applying the tools and the lessons you've learned to what really start out as small ideas. And even the great composers, Beethoven, Mozart, Bach, they start out with small ideas and they figure out how to extrapolate that into a larger piece.
Christy, did you start playing the violin at a very early age?
I was 7. That was pretty early.
Yeah, I would say so. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And did you know at some point that this was going to be your baby? I mean, obviously you've devoted a great deal of time to it throughout your life.
Well, the way it happened for me was there was a form that came home from school that said, would you like your child to play the violin? And my mother checked yes, and that was it. And at some point, yes, it stuck with me. It was good. It was a good instrument for me. So I think in high school, I knew that it was something that I wanted to continue with.
What about you, Gary Kleeman? You start playing guitar early?
I started playing guitar at the age of 11. And that means I've been playing for a long time. I think probably for folks like Christy and myself, it was sort of an immediate, intuitive, and irrevocable decision. Once I started playing, I never thought about not playing again. And I think you have the same reaction. It would have been unthinkable to put the instrument down. There's just a deep connection to it. And Chrissy is one of the most naturally inventive players I've ever heard, which speaks to her deep commitment to the instrument.
You've recorded some stuff, have you not?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Is that available? And if so, how do people find it?
Cloud Chamber has one CD out, which you can pick up when we perform live. We are going to work on a second CD with all new material on it and some original material on it. So we're pretty excited about that. But anytime anyone comes to see us live, the CD is available.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about musical influences. Gary and I have talked in the past, and we share some of some favorite artists down through the years, Joni Mitchell, Tom Rush.
Absolutely.
Would you tell me you were at the Tom Rush concert down at Carnegie Hall a couple of years back?
I think you told me you were there.
I was
there. Yeah, you were there.
What a night. What a night. Wow.
Yeah, Tom Rush is a great player.
Does a lot of Joni Mitchell stuff. Some of it better than Joni Mitchell does, I think, to be honest with you.
Yeah, Tom Rush's version of Urge for Going is one of the all-time classic recordings. Tom Rush, and you know, a lot of people think that, some of these folks are just self-taught folk performers, but he's a Harvard guy, if memory serves.
Yeah, it's true.
Joni Mitchell is a great player. Dave Van Ronk, Bob Dylan.
Tom Paxton.
There's a whole universe of all these great folk players that came to preeminence in the 50s and 60s with attendant great songwriting. Eric Anderson, Tim Buckley. There's an entire group of them.
Eric Anderson. Well, I got to dig out my CD. I got a couple of his. I haven't listened to them in a while.
Eric Anderson, yeah, he's a great player. And he's still playing. He's still recording. A lot of these guys are still out there. They're still on the road.
Yeah.
And they did great composition and great work, and it shouldn't be forgotten.
What about the Beatles? Because you do some Beatles stuff, don't you, occasionally?
We do.
Was that an influence on you, Christy?
I guess later on. I was more of a classical stiff. I was listening to, you know, Jascha Heifetz and David Oistrakh, and now want to be Stefan Grappelli rather than David Oistrakh, great classical violinist.
But symphonies these days, I mean, you know, the Beatles broke up in, what, 71, 70, 71?
Yeah,
50 years ago. There are symphonies now that do programs of Beatles music because they recognize, now, not, I don't like every Beatles tune that they've, you know, they did one about 500 songs, but some of them I think are just absolutely classics.
Well, I've often contended that the hardest act in music is to write a melody that is unique, memorable, and inevitable. And certain great artists, no matter what field they're in, classical or pop, have that gift. And the Beatles had that pure melodic gift. And in today's world, which I think is a good thing, there's a lot less wall erecting or barriers between different types of music. People can move freely back and forth between different genres. There's a lot of cross-pollination going on and a lot of recognition of genius in coming from various different musical genres. And the Beatles were melodic geniuses.
Yeah, that's for sure. Just mentioning them, there's a couple of songs are starting to pop into my head right now.
Oh, yeah, you know? Yeah.
Norwegian Wood.
Yeah. Nowhere Man.
Nowhere Man.
I'm happy just to dance with you. We've added some Beatles tunes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They are, listeners, Cloud Chamber. Christy Kekskometi and Gary Kleeman visiting with us here today. Christy on violin and Gary on 12-string and 6-string guitar. You play both
12,
whenever you're in concert. Mm-hmm. You can see them at the Frick Museum May 5th. That's not too far down the road. You can see them in early June at the Three Rivers Arts Festival. See them and hear them. You can see them June 16th at the Butler Area Public Library. And in July and again in September as part of the Butler Symphony's lunchtime concert series. So a lot of opportunities to see them and hear them coming up over the next several months.
Mm-hmm.
I hope to catch a couple of those performances at least.
We would love to see you there.
We'd love to see you.
I look forward to it. Thanks for being here today. Good to talk with you about music and, you know, your passion for this. It's good stuff.
Thank you, Dave.
More to come on It's Your Turn tomorrow. It's an Ask the Veterinarian Day tomorrow. Dr. Dennis Damon will be here. His practice is at Suburban Animal Clinic, and we'll be talking about your pets. And with the advent of warm weather, we got lots of stuff to talk about, ticks and other stuff like that with the warm weather here. So get your questions ready tomorrow. And lots more, of course, as we move through the week here on It's Your Turn. It's only Monday, after all. We have Pirate Baseball tonight. We have Penguin Hockey coming back on Wednesday night here on WISR, so stay tuned for all of those. Mike Lang was in Philly last night. I didn't think he was traveling, because, you know, at the beginning